Today we're going to begin here on the bottom of Nun Hei Amud Bet, five lines from the bottom. Gemara here is discussing the position of Amrav Asi, Amrav Yochanan, Hameitzar veChatzav, a border or the Chatzav, which the Gemara will discuss at the end of today's sugya, Mafsikim v'nichzei ager. They create a separation in the possessions of a ger, and that means if you're trying to take possession of the areas of the ger, these will create them or make them distinct properties. And thereby, if you take possession of one of them, you don't automatically get the other one. We discussed this with regards to the fact that by a ger, you don't have a dat matneh, and you don't have kesef, you don't have consideration. So neither of those can define for you what you are acquiring, and therefore it's very important to know where you are located, and its relevance or relationship to the other properties. The Gemara was mitayek from that of Alinyan Peyav Tumalo. By Peyav Tumah, that would not be true. And then we have an alternate view in the Amoraim as to what the position of Biyochanan was, which is Kiyat HaRavin and Biyochanan Afilu LePeyav Tumah. Even for Peyav Tumah, these things are mafsik. So that was yesterday's daf, discussing Nichzei Ager, and then Peyav Tumah, how they are mafsik. Then we come on here, the Gemara concludes, Aval LeShabbat Lo. All those Amoraim in the name of Biyochanan agree that with regards to Shabbat, these items will not create a distinct area or a separation. Rav Amar afilu l'inyan Shabbat. Rav disagrees and says that these items will create a separation and create distinct areas for Shabbat. Titania, we have a braita. Hotzi chatzi grugoret l'rishut rabim. Person takes out half a dried fig to reshut rabim, v'nichon, he puts it down. V'chazar v'otzi chatzi grugoret acheret. And then he takes out another half fig to the reshut rabim, be'elam echad, in one forgetting, which means that in between the two actions, he does not remember that it's a Shabbat. So that will allow them, by a chata, to be mitzareif, to join together to create a full shiur. The standard shiur by carrying on Shabbat is a grugoret, is a dried fig. There are other measurements. The Mishnayot in Shabbat are replete with items and the measurements for each item, but this is the standard, the default size of an item, because you need a davar chashuv, you need a significant item, and you need malachit makshevet, you need to do something with intent over here. So then chayav, in that case you are chayav achatat, b'shnei alamot, if it was in two forgettings, meaning that in between you realize that it was Shabbat, yidiyah by achatat is enough to separate between the two actions. If you know in between that it was Shabbat, not that you remember that you did something wrong, but simply the knowledge that it is Shabbat in between will be sufficient to separate the two actions, and therefore they will not be mitzareif. Rabbi Yossi Omer, behela mechad b'shut achat chayav, that if it's one forgetting and one location, then you're chayav. B'shtei rishuyot patur, if it is two different locations, then you are patur. So this is what Rabbi is saying is relevant by Shabbat. For Rabbi Yossi's opinion, who says that if it's two locations, they're considered to be separate, and you are patur, that is true if the division between these properties is a meitzar or a chatzav. For Rava, those are sufficient grounds for creating separate entities, and since they're separate entities, you are patur. The way that the Rashbam explains it over here is that be'elam echad, what happened here when you took them out, you can see in the Rashbam at the top here, b'shut harabim atzma. That has to be the same Reshut HaRabim that you're exiting to. On Shabbat, to be Chayav for Hotza, you have to move from Reshut HaYachid to Reshut HaRabim, or Reshut HaRabim to Reshut HaYachid. So over here, the assumption is moving from Reshut HaYachid to Reshut HaRabim. That Reshut HaRabim has to be a singular entity. If the Reshut HaRabim is split somehow, then according to Rabbi Yossi, that would not suffice to create the tziruf that you need between the two half grugorot that you took out. But if it's shtei rishuot, meaning that you have a reshut yachid, for instance, that sits between two thoroughfares, there's a reshut rabim on one side, reshut rabim on the other side. If you carry half a grugorot out to one reshut rabim, and then half grugorot out to the other reshut rabim, then you are patur according to Rabbi Yossi. According to the Chachamim, the Tanakhama, you'll be chayav. In the end, you did the same halacha, hotzah. You move from Reshut HaYachid to Reshut HaRabim. Does it matter that one Reshut HaRabim is on the east side, one's on the west side? Doesn't really matter. But for Rabbi Yossi, that's sufficient grounds to be a division. And that's what Rava says, that a Meitzar and Chatzav are sufficient division. Meaning if they run along the whole Reshut HaRabim, they will divide the Reshut HaRabim into two different sections. And if you carry out into those two different sections, you will be chayav according to the Chachamim, patur according to Rabbi Yossi. And that's where Rava says this din is relevant by Shabbat. The Amorim that are quoting Rabbi Yochanan believe that by Shabbat, that's not a sufficient division between them. We'll see in a second the alternate opinions to Rava. That is the way that the Rashbam reads it, and it's not clear from our Girsa whether what he is saying is the only way to read it, or is there an alternate way to read it. See in the Balei HaTosafot, they already quote from the Rabbeinu Chananel that there's an alternate Girsa. Rabbeinu Chananel is held by the fact that when it comes to Tiva on Shabbat, when it comes to writing on Shabbat, the Gemara in Shabbat tells us, and Daf Kuf Dalid, that according to Rabbi Yossi, if you write one letter here, Achat Bitveria, Achat Bitzipori, and then you write another singular letter in Tzipori, Chayav, you're Chayav. The minimum shiur for writing on Shabbat is Shtei Otiot, two letters. What happens if you write one letter in this city, one letter in the other city? Now, you didn't write two letters together, you wrote them in separate locations. According to Rabbi Yossi, you're still Chayav on Shabbat, because you are Mechusar Kreva. The only thing missing over here is just bringing them together. There is just a physical impediment between the two letters, which is one's found here, one is found there. But technically, you could bring the two letters together. If you took them from one city to the other city, you could have two letters, and they could be placed next to each other and be read together. Therefore, you're in violation of the din of Ktiva. And he says, Mechusar Kreva, Lav Ki Mechusar Maase Domi. That's not a lack in action or the executing on the malacha when it's simply distance that is between you. And so over here, the Rabbeinu Chananel says, I don't understand. Here Rabbi Yossi is saying that two different rishuyot are considered to be separate entities. Well, why? All there is a separation of space between them. You carried out in this rishut rabim, that rishut rabim. The only problem is just bringing them together. So why shouldn't it be mitzaref? So that's what the Rabbeinu Chananel's question is. And therefore, his explanation here is the following. Veres Rabbeinu Chananel, Mishut Achat Chayav. If he exited from one Rishut, then you are Chayav. Mishtei Rishuyot Patur. If you exit from two locations, then you are Patur. So as opposed to the Rashbam, who sees the destination being the argument here, is the destination one entity or two entities? The Rabbeinu Chananel says is the source, the departure area, one entity or two entities? So the Rashbam is saying, is the Rishut Rabim split or is it not split? The Rabbeinu Chananel is saying, is the Rishut Yachid split or not split? The Rishut Yachid that you're exiting from into the Rishut Rabim, are you exiting from one Rishut? Are you exiting from two Rishuyot? And that's the way the Rabbeinu Chananel solves the problem. Imotzi chatzi grogeret mishtei Rishuyot the Rishut Rabim patur. You take out from two different Rishuyot Yachid into the Rishut Rabim, even though it's a single Rishut Rabim, you won't be chayav because the source or your departure area was different, or they were separated or segregated. But if you leave from a single location, then you would be chayav, even if you took it into two separate rishuyot rabim, because of Rabbi Yossi's position, that mechusar kreva is not mechusar maset. That is the view of the Rabbeinu Chananel, the exact opposite of the Rashbam as to where the problem of two rishuyot is. Ri says, Ri nira tolab pirchahi, that the Rabbeinu Chananel's question is not problematic. Since it's not problematic, then obviously you would not need to reverse the Girsa'ot to solve the problem, because he thinks the cases are different. Delo dami, two cases are not similar. Dehaltam, shem melacha k'tiva, v'ktiva nigmira. Over there, the melacha that you're trying to accomplish, or that you're executing on, is writing. Writing means two otiot. And that's what you did. You wrote two letters. Even if they're written far away from each other, you wrote the two otiot. Aval hocha, shem melacha hi hotza'a. Over here, the malocha itself is hotza'ah. Shotzeh l'shtei rishiyot, akati lo nigmara hotza'ah, achi karvein. The hotza'ah is not done until you bring them together in the destination where you are getting to. So you have to look, the Rebbe says, at the definition of the malocha. You look at the definition of the malocha, then by ktiva, the definition of malocha is writing two letters. Okay, now they're found in two locations? Fine, that's not a deficit in the malocha. You wrote two letters. You simply now need to bring those letters together to make it shtei otiot that can be read at once. But in terms of the accomplishment of the melacha, you've done a melacha, which is two letters being written. Then by hotza'ah, the whole goal of hotza'ah is to bring items to a particular location. So take it from one location, Rishut Yachid, into the Rishut Rabim. If they are not together in the Rishut Rabim, you haven't accomplished the melacha. It's a failure in the definition of the melacha here to take it to separate locations. So even though Rabbi Yossi believes that letters in different locations are considered to be writing, he will agree over here that taking it out into two different locations, it's not enough to be considered a single melacha. So therefore, the Rish says you don't need to be compelled, like Rabbeinu Hananel, to change the girsa, and you could uphold the girsa like the Reshbam. So you'd have to look at these two different views, also in the definition of what the problem is in the melacha, which is that, according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, he's trying to simulate what it is by ktiva, which is that by ktiva, just being far apart is not enough. What we need you to do in order to be considered that you haven't written two letters is you have to create some sort of functional separation between the two actions. The actions have to be completely independent to a point where you would never be able to bring them together. And so therefore, when you take it out of two rishuyot, then what you've done is you've done two different milachot, in a sense. Two different actions that cannot be mitzaref, because each action stands independently. Since each action stands independently, you can't join them together. Similar, not exactly, but similar to the case of Helem Achat versus Shtei Halamot. If it's in one forgetting, then the items are mitzaref because it's considered to be one melacha. Then if Shtei Halamot, if you have a remembering in between, it's now in two forgettings, then what you've done is basically made the first action independent. And now when you take the second action, it cannot be joined with the first action because of your remembering in between, which creates a segregation between the two actions. And somewhat similar, when you take it out of the properties, the two different properties make it as segregated actions that cannot be joined together. You can never join them. On the other hand, for the Reshbam, here the failure is that you're taking it to two different Rishuyot, meaning that your accomplishment fails because you're taking it out into one Rishutabim here, one Rishubutta Rabim over there, and as the Rish says, that's a failure in the goal of Hotzah. The goal of Hotzah is to move an item from one location to the other location in a significant manner. If you have less than a shiur, then you fail. So according to the Rishbam, the failure here is not that we're separating between two halves of Malacha, it's simply that you have a chatzi shiur in each case. In each case, you took out a chatzi shiur to a location, and then you took a chatzi shiur to the other location. Those two chatzi shiurim can't join together to be a shiur achat because they're in two different locations. You never accomplished the goal of moving a grugeret from this location to that location. You didn't do that because you took them to two different locations. So it's a failure in chatzi shiur. And obviously then by helem achat, you'd have the same problem, which is that in each case, you took out half a grugeret. Then remember that it was Shabbat. That remembering makes whatever you did before a chatzi shiur, and then whatever you did afterwards a chatzi shiur, they're never going to be joined together. So that's how you have to explain conceptually what's happening between the two different opinions. Now, v'amar Rabba, v'hu yishayesh chiyuv chatat b'nehem. So now this is not Rava's opinion, but this is Rabba's opinion. What is considered a separation according to Rabbi Yossi? What divides this rishiyot? Whether that's according to the Rashbam, meaning dividing up the Rishut Rabim, or according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, dividing up the Rishut Yachid, what do you need in between them to consider them two different entities? He says you need a chiyuv chatat b'nehem. So this goes back, little chazara, back to the Gemara and Shabbat, arba rishuyotein. There are four different locations on Shabbat, rishut yachid, a private domain, which is defined by an area that is either 10 tefachim high, depressed 10 tefachim, and has a space that is 4x4 tefachim. Or you have walls around it that are 10 tefachim high that encompass an area that is 4x4 tefachim. That is considered to be a rishut yachid. Rishut Rabim is a public thoroughfare. It's an area, in all likelihood, that is a width of 16 amot. And then the Rishonim discussed the possibility that it might need a flow of traffic of 600,000 people. That's not very clear or obvious inside of both the Gemara and the Rishonim, but it is something that eventually makes it into the normative realm, because there are Rishonim that believe you need that 600,000 based on the people in the Midbar. So that is a Rishut Rabim. Those areas are what he called Rishuyot de'oraita. Those are Torah-defined areas, and those are the restrictions min haTorah to move from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim, or from Rishut Rabim into Rishut Yachid. There are two other areas that the Gemara in Shabbat mentions. One is a Karmelit. A Karmelit is an area that is not a Rishut Rabim, but it does not qualify to be a Rishut Yachid. Classic example that's brought in the Gemara and Shabbat is a bik'ah, a large area of fields, open area, where you don't have walls around it, so it's not going to be defined as Rishut Yachid, but it's not also an area where the Rabim traverse. There's no road through there, there's no area that they're crossing. These are fields that people plant in, and therefore it impedes traffic. People don't walk through there, they might cut through there every once in a while, but it's clearly not a Rishut Rabim. So it's neither a Rishut Rabim nor a Rishut Yachid. That's called a Karmelit. A Karmelit is an area midrabanan where you're not allowed to move from a Rishut Yachid to a Karmelit. Karmelit to Rishut Yachid. And same thing with a Karmelit to Rishut Rabim, Rishut Rabim to a Karmelit. The Chachamim created this new entity called Karmelit, which midrabanan is to prevent the problem or to avoid the problem of moving Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim, is that you can't move from a Karmelit to either one of those other areas. And it has the same status as Rishut Rabim, that you can't carry even four amot in a Karmelit, just like you can't carry four amot in Rishut Rabim. So that's the area called the Karmelit. It's defined by an area that is 4x4 tefachim at minimum, but it is not 10 tefachim high, or depressed 10 tefachim, or it doesn't have walls around it. Any one of those will be defined as a Karmelit. There's a last area, which is an area called a Makom Ptur. Now, Makom Ptur, by its own definition, is a place in a sense that doesn't really exist, or it's not significant enough to be considered a location. Which is that it's a place, but a place that doesn't carry significance in of itself. And that is an area, generally, it has to be more than 3 tefachim off the ground, but less than 10 tefachim high. It's 10 tefachim high already, it would be a Rishuta Yachid. So a Makom Ptur has to be a minimum of 3 tefachim off the ground, less than 10 tefachim high, and less than 4x4 tefachim. Because already it was 4x4 tefachim, it already gained the definition of a Karmelit. So here, that is a Makom Ptur. So an example of that would be, you have a pillar in the Rishut Rabim. This is a good way to look at this. If you have a pillar in the Rishut Rabim, if it is 10 tefachim high, the pillar, and 4x4 tefachim, the top of the pillar would be considered a Rishut HaYachid. If it is less than 10 tefachim high, and 4x4 tefachim, that would be considered a Karmelit. If it is 10 tefachim high, but less than 4x4 tefachim, or if it is less than 10 tefachim high and less than 4x4, that would be classified as a Makom Ptur. So what Rabba says over here is that the only areas that can break up a Rishut Yachid or Rishut Rabim is another area de Oraita. That means in order for them to be two separate Rishuyot HaYachid, you would need a Rishut Rabim to sit in between them. Or for it to be two different Rishuyot HaRabim, you would need a Rishut HaYachid to sit in between them. That what it means, a Chiyuv Chatat Benehem. A Torah-prescribed area must sit between them in order to divide them. That's clearly not like Rabba's position. Aval Karmelit, if it's only an area de Rabbanan, that would not separate the areas. That would not make it into two separate Rishuyot HaYachid or two separate Rishuyot HaRabim. According to Rabbi Yossi then, if you carried into those areas separated by a Karmelit, you would still be Chayav. The reason either is because, according to the Torah, the Karmelit is not significant enough to create a division. Or the other way to formulate it is that the Karmelit just becomes viewed as an extension of the Rishuyot HaRabim. It's not a Rishuyot HaRabim, but the fact that it's not significant midoraita means that we don't see any separation. We see them as the Rishuyot HaRabim continuing through this whole area. Abaye amar, afilu Karmelit. Even a Karmelit can separate between two areas. Aval pisla lo. But a pisla cannot do it. So now, if you're reading Abaye, what are you left with? If you say that a area d'oraita separates, an area d'rabbanan also separates, so the only thing that doesn't separate is a pisla, which the Rishbam explains is a Makom Ptur. Makom Ptur is not significant enough to separate. A Karmelit, even though it's only an area mid'rabbanan, I mean, a Torah, there's no recognition of that area. That area shouldn't be a separation mid'oraita. Nevertheless, since the Chachamim looked at this area as being significant enough to be guzer, or create a takanan Shabbat, that there is an area called the Karmelit, we will view that as being distinct or separate enough to divide between two Rishuyot HaRabim or Rishuyot HaYachid. Aval Pisla, when it comes to a Pisla, that will not be the case. If you look in the Rashbam, Al Pisla Lo, Kagon, Chaticha Deitz Uamud, She'eno Gvoa Yud Tfachim, Ve'en Rochav Dalet. It's not 10 Tfachim high, and it's not 4x4 wide. So that's what we defined before as a Makom Ptur. In Ami, here the Rashbam gives you a little, he says, maybe Gavoa Yud, if it's 10 high, El She'en Rochav Dalet, but it's not 4x4. Davi Makom Ptur, Afilu Midrabanan, Mutar L'Taltel Mitocho, L'Rishut Rabim, L'Rishut Rabim L'Tocho, since you are Mutar to carry between these areas, therefore it doesn't define it as being a separate entity or separate existence. And that goes back to the Karmelit that we spoke about before. That if you think the Karmelit is problematic, midrabanan, maybe d'oraita, I can carry from one Rishut Rabim into the Karmelit, from the Karmelit to the Rishut Rabim, It's as if it doesn't exist. It's as if it's not there, so it won't separate. But, according to Abaye, since Midrabanan, they made it significant, it does create a separation. What's interesting or unusual about the Rashbam here is he gave you two definitions as to what the Pisla is. The first definition is a Makom Tur. The second one that's 10 Tfachim high, but is not Rochav Dalet, is not 4x4 Tfachim, that's much more problematic because it's definitely a Mechitza. And all we care about here is separation. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about a Meitzar and a Chatzav that separate between areas. If you build a wall, you don't need it to be a defined space in order to create a separation. And you need something either of significance or a wall to separate. And over here, according to the Rashbam, if it is 10 tfachim high and not 4x4, he says, oh, that's not a separation. What do you mean that's not a separation? That's a wall. A wall that's 10 tfachim high, no matter how thick it is or how wide it is on the top, is classified as a mechitza. So that's why that second line in the Rashbam is a little difficult, because of the fact that it is a mechitza, even if it is a makom ptur, it shouldn't relieve you of the problem here, because it's a mechitza, and a wall will definitely separate between two different areas. All right, so that's just in the Rashbam. The Balei Tosafot already say, Hiksha Riva, Valo Pisla Hi Karmelit. So this isn't a Pisla Karmelit. And he proves from the Gemara in Gittin that a Pisla is considered to be an area that is a Rishut Le'atzma. It's its own entity, its own space. It's Kagon Delog Vayut. It's not 10 Tfachim high, but it's more than 3, but 4x4 wide. And that makes it into a Karmelit. Says, okay, now my Kamara, Valo Pisla Lo. If a Balei says that Karmelit does separate, then why does the Pisla not separate if it is also a Karmelit? So the Yesh Lamar, Mekom Gom Ho V'Katanu Kol Kach U'Mitaltel Lo Chashiva La'Abai Lafsik Ben Bet Rishiot B'Karmelit. So what the Balei Tosfot say is Abai's opinion is not Karmelit is a division. Mekom Ptur is not a division. He's saying even within Karmelit, not all Karmelits are made the same. Karmelit is a very, very broad term for areas that are considered as Sumi D'Rabbanan. That includes an area, fields, a span of large, large area that's all these fields gathered together. That's a Karmelit. Also, this little pole that is 4x4 tefachim that's sitting in your yard that can be moved around, that's a Karmelit as well. But it says, depends. A significant Karmelit, that will separate. An insignificant Karmelit will not separate, both because it's only 4x4 tefachim, it's less than 10 tefachim high, and you can move it around, it's mitaltel. For that reason, it's not classified as significant. So the Balei Tosafot see this as not being a separation between Karmelit and Makom Ptur, but rather between different types of Karmeliot, whereas the Rashbam views it as being a difference between Karmelit and Makom Ptur. Now here comes Rava. Rava Amar Afilu Pisla. Rava says, even a Pisla can separate. Anything can separate. That's what Rava said before. Rava said he disagreed with the Amorim, they're bringing the position of Rabbi Yochanan, where Rabbi Yochanan either said there was only a separation for Nichsei Ger, or Rabbi Yochanan also said for Nichsei Ger, Tuma and Peah, but for Shabbat, no separation from a Meitzar and a Chatzav. Rava says, yes, a Meitzar and a Chatzav can separate. And that's what you see here. Rava says, even a Pisla, according to the Balei Tosafot, that means some sort of insignificant Karmelit. According to the Rashbam, it means a Makom Ptur. Given that it's a Makom Ptur, then Rava believes that anything can separate. And that's what he said before, a Meitzar and a Chatzav can create a separation for the Rishiyot on Shabbat. Va'azda Rava l'tameh. And this is Rava the Shita To, which is that now when he's defining for Rabbi Yossi that a separation in Rishiyot can happen even with a Pisla, even with a Makom Ptur. And he said before a Meitzar and a Chatzav can also create that same separation, because anything can create a separation. That is also Rava the Shita To, the Gabe Gitin. Dama Rava, Rishut Shabbat, ki Rishut Gitin Dami. Shabbat and Gitin have the same din when it comes to the division of different areas or creating distinct properties. That is that by the din of Gitin, there is a halacha that you have to get the get into the possession of the woman. So there are different ways to get into the possession of the woman. One is to give it to her, hand it to her, and she gets it. The other one is to throw it into an area that she possesses, into chatzera, her chatzer, and her chatzer will take possession of it on her behalf. It'll act on her behalf to take possession of it. What happens if she has no property? And therefore she can't have a chatzer to acquire it. And the husband wants to get the get to the woman, but either he doesn't want to see her, he doesn't want to hand it to her in person, or he's not close to her, he's not nearby. Can he create a situation in which she has a chatzer, and that chatzer will acquire on her behalf? So the husband grants her possession of one of his chatzerot, makes it into chatzera, her chatzer, and says, this will be your chatzer, and it will acquire on your behalf. If he then throws the get into that chatzer, and it lands in the chatzer, it will be a get, because it came into her possession. Assuming here, I'm not going into all the details in the Gemara Gittin, as to whether it's a schut or a chiyuv, it's something that is positive or negative for the woman to receive the get, because that'll have implications as whether you can do it without her acquiescence, or whether she needs to be a party to her acceptance of the chatzer, and then the chatzer accepting on her behalf. All of that is from the Gemara in Gittin. But over here, what's important to us is if he throws it into this chatzer that he granted it to her, it will be a good get. But if it lands on something else inside the chatzer, it will not be a good get. The Gemara over there says, because a person is want to give a singular property to another party to acquire, they will not give them multiple properties. The only question is, what's considered to be a single property? What comes with the chatzer? And what is considered to be distinct within the chatzer that he didn't grant it to her? So here he grants her the chatzer. There are these pislot in the middle of the chatzer. If the get lands on one of those pislot, is she divorced now? It didn't land on the chatzer that he had granted to her, but it landed on the pislot that's inside the chatzer. Do you view the pislot as being batel to the chatzer, and therefore it landed in the chatzer and she's now divorced? Or do you see it as a separate and distinct area? Rava says with the Gabei Gittin, it's considered or classified as a separate and distinct area. So that's Rava's Shita. Rava's Shita is that even a pisla, even a makom p'tur in a chatzer, is classified as a separate location for Gittin. And so too by Shabbat. Pisla will be considered enough of a separation to divide up Rishiyot. And that's what the Gemara says. This is Rava the Shitato. Just like by Gittin, he thinks that that's the case. And he equates between Gittin and Shabbat. So too by Shabbat, the Pisla will be an entity that separates. And Rava has the most, let's say, the extreme position here, which is the smallest item can separate between the two Rishiyot on Shabbat. And in that way, he disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan that it's limited, this Meitzar and Chatzav, to Nichsei Ager, Peyan, Tumah, but it also applies to Shabbat. That's similar to his position by Gittin, that a Makom Ptur will also be considered a distinct area for divorce. Similarly, in Shabbat, it will also be considered a distinct area. All right, now the Gemara moves on with an ambiguous statement, which leads us to a machloket as to how to explain the Gemara going forward, which is, Ein sham lo meitzar velo chatzav, mai. If there is no meitzar and no chatzav, what's the din? What are we speaking about? Gemara is almost like a non sequitur. It says, okay, if there's no meitzar and no chatzav, what's the din? We just dealt with nichsei ager, tuma, Peya, Shabbat, and Gittin. About which one of those is the Gemara now saying, if there's no Meitzar and Chatzav, what's the din? It's very unclear. So now we have Perish Rabbi Marinus. Mishmo means Mishem Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Marinus says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Tzokol Shnei Kreit Al Shmo. Anything that's called by his name. We'll get into a definition of this in a second in the Gemara. Anything that has a singular name is considered to be a singular entity. Now, the Rashbam says, well, Rabbi Marinus, Mishmo, Mishmein, Rabbi Yochanan, is going back to the beginning of this sugya. The beginning of this sugya was that for Rabbi Yochanan, a Meitzar or Chatzav separate the Nichsei Hager. Earlier on, you remember we had a machlok between Rav and Shmuel with regards to the acquiring of Nichsei Hager. We said there that if it is considered to be a defined, distinct area, then according to Rav, if you do Makosh Echad, you acquire the whole thing. According to Shmuel, you do Makosh Echad, you get your Makosh Echad and nothing more. In an area that was not defined or distinct, Rav said, how do you acquire the property? So there we had a machloket at the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot. The Rashbam said that if you plow it back and forth along the whole length of the property, then you get the whole length and width of the property, even though it's not defined where the property is. Balei Tosafot said the other way around. With Makosh Echad, with one hit in an undefined property, according to Rav, you get the amount of plowing one way and back. That's what you'll get. That's all that you accomplish. So now what the Rishbam says is, this statement over here of the Gemara is, according to Rabbi Yochanan, when you don't have a Meitzar and a Chatzav, it's an undefined area, how much do you acquire? It's now a third opinion, arguing with Rav and Shmuel before, about how you acquire property. How do you acquire property in an undefined space? According to Shmuel, there's nothing to speak about, because even in a defined space, you only get that one makosh. So too, in an undefined space, you only get that one makosh. For Rav, you get, according to the Rashbam, let's keep Rashbam the Shitato, you get the entire area when you plow it back and forth. Now, Rabbi Yochanan gives us an opinion that Meitzar and Chatzav are separators. Well, if you don't have those separators, then how much do you acquire when you do a Makos Shechad, or how do you acquire this undefined property? That's what Rabbi Merinus Mishmo says, that if you do Makos Shechad, you acquire everything with the same name. As long as it's so-and-so's field, then that will acquire that entire field with your Makos Shechad. That defines for you the perimeters of what you acquire now, which is that the Makos Shechad gets you the entirety of the area that is called by the same name. Not that these are multiple fields, it's so-and-so's fields. No, it's so-and-so's field. As long as it's that name on the one field, and they're all considered to be one field, that will give you the defined space that you acquire. So that's how the Rashbam reads it, that this is a continuation of Rav and Shmuel's statement before about the plowing of the field back and forth by the shore. And now we want to know, according to Rabbi Yochanan, how much do you acquire when you are by Makos Shechad? And Rabbi Yochanan says you get the entire area that is defined by the name of the field. According to Rav, it's not clear, because Rav doesn't talk about Makos Shechad. According to Bali HaTosafot, he does speak about Makos Shechad, and therefore you have Makos Shechad over there be the amount of a plowing back and forth. For Rabbi Yochanan, it would be the amount of field that is defined by a singular name. So that's the way the Bali HaTosafot would explain the Machloket in this position of the Rashbam. According to Rashbam, Rav said you have to plow back and forth to get the area. Rabbi Yochanan says you just do Makos Shechad, you get anything that's called by the same name. The Bali HaTosafot don't like this explanation. There are a number of reasons to have a problem with the position of the Rashbam, one of which is that the next line in the Gemara is going to be spoken by Rav Papa. And therefore, Rav Papa is giving definition to what you acquire in these undefined areas. And the problem with that is that Rav Papa was the one who defined for us the area, Kazil Torah, Dishari Vahadar. He was the same person that defined for us, Barav, what you accomplish. So if they're arguing about the same thing, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, and here Rav Papa is giving different definitions, you could argue, one's for Rav, one's for Rabbi Yochanan. But it seems like Rav Papa is giving halacha, and therefore Rabbi Papa would be soter himself, because Rav Papa is mentioned there on top of Nindalad Amud Bet, and now he's mentioned again here on Nindalad Amud Aleph, giving different definitions as to what's considered the entity that you acquire when you do a Makos Echad, or when you plow back and forth. Well, that's one of the reasons why the Rashbam's explanation is difficult. But many of the Rishonim dismissed that problem by suggesting that the field we were speaking about over there was a state vua, and the field that we're speaking about over here is a state ilan, or even more apt is to say that over here we're speaking about a state shlachim, which is a field that needs to be watered, and over there we're speaking about a state baal, which was a field that's watered by rain. And because of the nature of the difference in the fields, that's why you'll have two answers as to what is required in order to acquire the property. The second one is that the Bali HaTosafot point out, the Rashbam assumed Mishmo was in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. But the Bali HaTosafot point out is if you look in the Tosefta in Taharot, it says over there, Hanichnas lebika b'motek shemim v'tumah basadeh. Ploni amro lifnei Rabbi Eliezer, perish Rabbi Menanus, Mishmo, ko sheyesh l'shem bifnei atzma. So what he says is, this is part of the Tosefta that we brought before with regards to Tumah and the separation of areas of Tumah. When is it considered to be a Rishut Yachid or a Rishut Rabim? And whether it's a fake Biyah or a fake Tumah, all of that is brought in the Tosefta. Right after that it says, Rabbi Merinus Mishmo, says in his name. His name is referencing Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Lazar, depending on what you think the Girsa is. In the Tosefta, he's a Tano in the Tosefta, quoting the Tosefta. It's not an Amora, Rabbi Merinus, quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Rather, Rabbi Merinus, the Tana, quoting Rabbi Elazar in that Braita. And therefore, this is why the Gemara doesn't preface it, because it's a continuation of the Tosefta that we spoke about by Tumah. Ein sham lo meitzar velo chatzav, mai. What's the din when you don't have a dividing line in there for Rabbi Elazar? Rabbi Elazar, remember, said when it came to Tumah, if it was one field, then the safek makes you tamei. If it's two different fields, then the safek, you would be tahor. So now he wants to know, what happens if the fields are not divided by a border of some sort, or by this chatzav? How do you define or know whether there's one field or multiple fields there? The answer is, kol shenikra al shemo. Anything that's called by a singular name is considered to be one field. Anything called by multiple names, multiple fields. Hechi dami. How do you define this? Amar Rav Papa, this is what I mentioned to you before. Rav Papa seems to be soter himself according to the Rishmah, to correlate bei garguta de planya. That you call it, that is the watering area of so-and-so. So what Rav Papa seemingly is saying, and you can't say that he's arguing on what was said before, because the Gemara is saying that he's defining it. So it's a little strange, because the Gemara said it, oh, before the definition is that the field is called by this person's name. Now Rav Papa says, no, it's not the field, it's the watering area. The way the Rishbam explains it is that whatever this cistern or this irrigation ditch could take care of it, that's all considered to be one field. That's how people define the fields. They define the fields by the water source. And so if this irrigation ditch or cistern can feed all these fields around it, that's called one area or one field. Meaning that this gargura, which is the water storage, if that water storage can water all these fields, they're all considered one field. They're considered to be a subs of the water hole there, and therefore they're defined by it. It's the central point, and everything around it will be defined by how far you can reach with that water. So what you have to say is, what Rav Papa is saying is, that's what it means. When you call the field by a single name, that's how fields are called. Fields are not called by so-and-so's field and so-and-so's field. They're called by, you know, watering hole A, watering hole B. These fields belong to A. These fields belong to watering hole B. These fields belong to watering hole C. That's the way that people define them. All right, so that's the machloke between the Balei Tosafot and Rashbam as to the meaning of this piece of the Gemara, whether this is defining for us locations for acquisition of undefined properties. Nixei Ager, that's what the Rashbam says. Balei Tosafot say it's telling us when you have multiple fields that are not clearly demarcated or distinct, how do I define what is considered to be a single field or multiple fields in the Dinei Tumah that Rabbi Lazar brought before in terms of Safek Tumah or Safek Biat Tumah? Now, Yotiv Rabbi Acha Bar Avya, Kameid Rabbi Asi, Yotiv Kamar Mishmeid Rabbi Asi Bar Chanina. So he was saying over the name of Rabbi Asi Bechina, Chatsuva Mafsik B'Nichse Ager. That the Chatsuva splits in Nichse Ager. This is very similar to what we just saw before in the position of Rabbi Yochanan, my chatsuva. So this is what the Gemara wants to know. What is this chatsuva you're talking about? Meitzar, we already spoke about. That's a border. And the Rashbam said it's an area that's distinct, whether it's stones that run along the border, whether it's an area that's raised or depressed, that gives some sort of definition to separating between the fields. But a chatsav, what's this chatsav that they kept mentioning? Amrav Yehuda, Amrav, Shubo Tichem Yeshua Yisrael et Aretz. It is the method by which Yoshua defined the borders inside of Eretz Yisrael. Ve'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, lo mana Yoshua el areot omdot al gvulim. When Yoshua listed out the cities, he was listing out the cities that sit on the borders. So now, what the Gemara here is saying is, number one, Yoshua, who wrote his own Sefer, that we saw earlier on Daf Yudalit in Baba Batra, Yoshua, when he enumerated cities inside of Sefer Yoshua, there's a large part of Yoshua which is dedicated to defining the areas of the Shvatim that Yoshua divided up Eretz Yisrael to. And in defining them, he gives you cities to define those areas. What the Gemara is saying is the cities that he gives there are not the cities on the borders of Eretz Yisrael, but the cities on the borders of the Shvatim. And so he lists the cities that define the borders of each Shevet. So that's, first of all, why these cities are mentioned, and they're not why they're random cities. These cities are defining cities. That's why it's important. Yerushalayim is one of those cities that is mentioned, because it's on the border between Yehuda and Binyamin, which becomes significant later on, both politically, why David moves the capital to there, as well as halachically with the Beit HaMikdash, that it was split between Binyamin and Yehuda, and where there's a Yesod and the Mizbeach. All of that comes about because of this split. So that's number one. Number two is, when Yoshua divided it up, how did he demarcate the land? You know, they didn't have these stakes that they put in the ground and paint them a color and say that, oh, here's the surveyor to find where the line is. So what they did was they planted this chatzav. This chatzav was a plant that rooted directly downwards, did not spread to the sides. So it was excellent for demarcating borders because it only rooted straight down. So therefore, if you put it between properties, it was easy to tell which side of which property you were because the roots didn't spread outwards, they stayed straight. And given that, he used this plant to define the borders. Here, some say between borders between Shvatim, others say even private, between the properties of different families after they did the Goral for that. But fine, whatever it is, that was this Chatzav. So Chatzav is a type of plant, bush, that is used to separate between areas. Right? Today, people use hedges or something to that effect to create separations between properties. So they plant something along the borderline in order to define the separation. And that's what this chatzav is. It's this plant that defines or separates between them. Then Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kol Shiraru HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Chayav B'Maaser. Anything that Hashem showed to Moshe Rabbeinu is defined as Eretz Yisrael, and therefore is Chayav in Maaser. What they are referencing over here is in Zot HaBracha, when Moshe goes up to Har Nevo, and what does he see? Vayal Moshe Maravot Ma'al V'Har Nevo, Rosh HaPiska Ashel Pnei Recho, Vayreu Hashem Et Kol HaAretz. He shows him the entire land. Et HaGilad Adan. Bet Kol Naftali, Bet Eretz Ephraim Umenashe, Bet Ol Kol Eretz Yehudara Yam Acharon, Bet HaNege, Bet HaKikar, Bikati Recho, Ir Tamri Matzoar. So this is, and he says, Ve'yom Hashem, Elav Zot Ha'aretz, She'er Nishbati, L'Avram Yitzchak L'Yakov, Le'mor, L'Zaracha Etenena. That is the land that I promised Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. That is the land that is defined as Eretz Yisrael. The problem with that is that the Torah, in numerous places, gives different definition to the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Here the Gemara looks at it very parochially about this statement here by Moshe and the promise by Brit Ben Abtarim. By Brit Ben Abtarim, it defines the borders as much greater than what we know the borders of Eretz Yisrael to be. In Sefer Bamidbar, when it talks about the Chiluk Haaretz, over there it gives you defined borders. It gives you cities, locations, and at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, it gives you a defined area of Eretz Yisrael, which is what we know, west of the Jordan, north of the Sinai, south of the Sewer of Tyre, and the west of the Mediterranean Sea. So there it gives definitions of the borders, and similarly seems to be the borders that are being spoken to Moshe over here. So you have a stira, which is that you have borders being given to Moshe, yet in Brit Ben Abtarim you have areas that are much greater. The truth is, it's not just in Brit Ben Abtarim, it seems to be a difference between the Sfarim. Between in Breishit, Eretz Yisrael is defined as a much larger area, in Devarim as well. Defined as a much greater area. If you look back in Parshat Etchanan, that when it says to Moshe, Moshe goes up in Parshat Etchanan to beseech Hashem, to allow him to enter into the land. So he says, I wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem says no. And he says to Malei Rosh HaPiska, go up to the mountain. He is in Evar Yarden. V'sainecha, Yama, V'tzafona, Teimano Mizracha, Rei Be'enecha. K'lo Tavor Yarden Zeh. Look west. Look north, look south, look east. Those are the areas of Eretz Yisrael, and then you're not going to go in there. Wait a minute. If Moshe is standing in Evar Yarden, why is God telling him to look east? East is already further east than the areas of Sichon and Og. He's standing in the properties that they conquered of Sichon and Og. Tell him, look east. Those are also properties of Eretz Yisrael. So you see the same problem here in Devarim, earlier in Devarim, in Bamidbar, it seems to match the areas that are defined later on in Devarim that Moshe says in Har Nevo. And again, in Besefer Breishit, you seem to have an issue also, which is that Brit Ben Abtarim has a much larger area. So it's a bigger problem in Chumash in general as to what are the borders of Eretz Yisrael. There's known as the Greater Eretz Yisrael, which goes all the way to the Nahar Prat, goes all the way to the Euphrates River, goes all the way south to Nachal Mitzrayim. It's a significantly greater area than that which is defined in Parshat Maseh, as well as in Parshat, at the end of Parshat in Zot HaBracha. So the Gemara here says here, the only places that are Chayav in Maaser are the areas that Moshe enumerates here in Zot HaBracha. So here it gives you a smaller area. Obviously it comes to exclude something. What does that exclude? So that says Lafuke Mai. What does it exclude? Lafuke Kini Knizi V'Kadmoni. Comes to exclude these three nations. Now, what the Gemara is referring to is the fact that inside of Canaan, there were seven nations that lived. So there are two promises, as what we're actually noting over here, which is a promise to Avram and Brit Ben Abtarim that includes 10 nations. The 10 nations would be include the Knizi, the Kadmoni, and the Kini, the Knizi, and the Kadmoni. On the other hand, the area of Eretz Canaan that is promised only includes seven nations. So now what the Gemara is saying is that the area that is defined where you're Chayav and Maser is the area that Moshe is looking at in Parshat in Zot HaBracha. The area of Knizi Kadmoni, the Kini, Knizi, and Kadmoni, which is mentioned to Avram in Brit Ben Abtarim, Those areas are patur mi maser. They're not chayav in maser. Where are those locations? Tanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, what are the names of these areas? Naphtocha, Araba, Vishalma. These are areas, the Nabataean areas, the Arabian areas, and the Salmaean areas. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Har Seir, Amon Moav. Rabbi Yehuda helps us out. It may not be that they have these individuals have different definitions necessarily. They just might be giving you the different proper names for these areas as they were known. But Rabbi Yehuda says it is Har Seir, which is Edom, Amon Moav, which are the three properties that are given to the relatives of Abraham. Two are given to Lot, which is Amon Moav, and one is given to Esav, which is Har Seir. Those three areas we are enjoined from attacking or taking possession of them. The Torah says we may not take those areas until the time of Mashiach. When we'll have the right or the ability to take these areas to include them in Eretz Yisrael. So now what the Gemara is saying is the areas that are Chayav and Maser are those areas that are defined by Eretz Canaan or the seven nations, not the other three nations, which will be Latid Labo. Now, there are a number of things you have to take into consideration here. First of all, why does it matter where areas that Moshe or Yoshua conquered? Because the Gemara has a machloket in a number of places as to what defines Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. Is it Kitcha L'Rishona V'Kitcha L'Atid Labo? When they acquired or conquered Israel for the first time, that imbued it with Kedusha, and that Kedusha is permanent. Or is it Kitcha Shnia Kitcha L'Atid Labo? That only once they had the second coming, which is when they returned to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Koresh, when they came back and they took over the properties, that defined what was considered to be Kadosh, and they remained those areas, and it's much smaller. They call those Ole Bavel, the areas of Ole Bavel, not Ole Mitzrayim. First of all, it's a machloket as to which Kedusha defines. The first one by the time of Yoshua, Ole Mitzrayim, or Ole Bavel. In either case, there's also a machloket as to whether that is a permanent Kedusha, or that Kedusha can be removed again. So, it happens to be, it's both a machloket, Amor Tanaim, Amoraim, and Rishonim, as to what it is. And even though Locha, we have Sveikot, even though we generally are of the position that it's Ole Bavel that define it for us, and we're Choshesh for areas of Ole Mitzrayim, therefore we have certain Kulot in those areas. When it comes to Shemitah and other things, they try to use those areas because there's Safek amongst the Rishonim as to what their status is. But over here, what the Bali Tosfos will point out is this Gemara clearly thinks that Kitcha Rishona, Kitcha Latid Labo. But to find the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was the Olei Mitzrayim. Because otherwise, why mention what Moshe saw? It's not meaningful unless you say that that's the Kedusha that is permanent. That's the first thing. Second thing is the Rashbam makes 2 points here, both of which are not simple and probably pretty controversial. One is that, he says over here, Zhem Zayin HaMamim HaKtuvim B'chol Makom. The seven nations that are written in all places that they conquered. Aval Kini Knisim Kadmoni Shenatnu LaAbraham Avinu Ben HaPtarim Lo Yitchayvu Maser LaTid Labo. In the future, they will not be chayav in maser, kishiachzavim lanu latid labo, when we get them back in the future. So Rashbam says something that's interesting, which is, I would have thought that the meaning of this is now, currently, the only places that are chayav in maser are the areas of the seven nations. The other three nations are not chayav in maser. Rashbam says, no, that means that forever, permanently. Those three areas of Amon, Moab, and Seir, or the Kini, Knizi, and Kadmoni, will never be chayav in maser. Even in the future, in the time of Mashiach, if we have all 10 areas, still, that greater Israel, only the areas inside of Eretz Canaan will be defined by that kedusha that is mechayev maser. Inami, he offers an alternative. Im kavshu Yisrael mehem achrei mot Yoshua, kulan p'turim in a maser. Even if they're conquered after the death of Yoshua, those areas, then they are considered to be patur min a maser. Because it says there, Zot Arz Hashenish Bati. We read that in Zot HaBrachat. This is the land I promised to your forefathers. Zot, this is the land, Limutei Mai, to eliminate or to exclude properties that were added on to Avram Avinu. It says, Ken Yirah Be'enai, that even if they conquered them at that point, they would not be Chayav in Maser. The Rashbam gives you two options. One is that, Latid Labo, they won't be Chayav in Maser. The other option is, once Yoshua defined the conquest of the areas of Olei Mitzrayim, after Yeshua passes away, there's no more consecration of areas, and therefore the Kini, Knizi, and Kadmoni, which were not conquered in the time of Yeshua, even if they're conquered later on, which does happen, especially in Bayit Sheni, in the time of the Chashmonaim, when they conquer those areas, They will not have Kedushat Haaretz. They will not acquire Kedushat Haaretz. Now, the Rishpam says, V'afagav d'Rifayim namiktiv b'Avraham. The Rifayim are also mentioned by Avraham. V'lo mimatinin lei, tahaynu chibi. Says, oh, why don't we say the Rifayim? Because the Rifayim are not mentioned in the seven nations of Canaan. So why don't we say the Rifayim are also excluded? They are addition that is given to Avraham. That's not mentioned in the seven nations. Says, that's not the case. Because Rifayim is synonymous with chibi. How do I know that? When Moshe conquered them, dechtiv, how he kra Eretz Rifaim. When he conquered those areas, it was called Eretz Rifaim. So he shows you that those areas that are known for the Chivi were synonymous with Rifaim. So that's why the Rishpam says that even though Ephraim is mentioned by Avraham and not by the seven nations, that's not an issue because Rifaim and Chivi are synonymous. Now here, the Rabbeinu Tam asks Tema, Tamashma Amonu Moav Lokav Shum Olei Mitzrayim. Sounds from here that the Olei Mitzrayim did not conquer the areas of Amonu Moav. Gemara says in Yevamot that when the Olei Bavel came, they left over the areas of Amonu Moav so that the Aniyim during the Shvi'it would have a place to go to get food. And that is because those were areas that were differentiated between Olei Bavel and Olei Mitzrayim. But that means that Amonu Moav are areas that are chayav in Maser, at least for the Olei Mitzrayim. And he says, don't say that the Amonu Moav that they're speaking about in Yevamot are the areas of Sichon and Og that they conquered from Amonu Moav. There the Torah goes through explaining that there was a battle between Sichon and Moav, and he took property that belonged to Moav. Therefore, when Bnei Yisrael conquered Sichon, they ended up getting portions of property that belonged to Moav because Sichon had been what's called Mitaheret for them. He cleansed it for them because it was no longer belonging to Moab. They were conquering it from Sichon, Melech HaEmori, who is one of the seven nations. It says, don't say that, because those areas were Chayav in Shmot Masrot, even in Bayit Sheni. Because the Mishnayot defined for us three areas, and the Gemara in Pesachim as well, defines for us three areas that you're Chayav in Shmot Masrot and Shemitah. And those are Yehuda, Eivir HaYardein, and the Galil. So Eivir HaYardein is included in those areas that do have Kedushat Haaretz. Those are the areas of Sichon and Og. So those areas you can't say were left over for the Aniyim to use, because those areas were considered to be areas that are Kadosh, even in the time of Olei Bavel. So Varmei Rabbeinu Tam, Eivir HaYardein Hainu Eretz Sichon V'Og, Shelo Hayta Me'Amonu Moav. That the area of Eivir HaYardein is the areas of Sichon and Og that weren't for Amonu Moav. The extra areas that Sichon conquered from Amonu Moav, those were considered to be separate. And that's what we are speaking about in the Gemara in Yevamot. Vod mitarez Rabbeinu Tam, divi Yevamot, nami ari v'amonu Moav, shlo ti'aru b'sichon. It's even speaking about the Amonu Moav that Sichon did not clear out, k'dahacha, v'lo l'barvel l'faresh hotam. There, it's not coming to explain to you why those areas are different, because those were only Mitzrayim and only Bavel, which is the context of the Gemara there, but rather explaining to you what they did in Amonu Moav, why they established a din that you should give Meiser Ani in Amonu Moav is because they wanted people to rely on it in the Shvi'it. They weren't telling you that Amonu Moav were Chayav in Olei Mitzrayim, not Chayav in Olei Bavel, and they left them on purpose. No, rather they're telling you they made a takana of such in order that they should be good during the Shvi'it, but not telling you what is considered to be from Olei Mitzrayim and not, but rather telling you why they made it Meiser Ani during those years and why they didn't make it into Meiser Sheni and so on and so forth. It's a different issue that they're dealing with. But it's interesting just because over there they're trying to define the areas of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And this is all part and parcel of that. And so what is classified are the borders of Eretz Yisrael and what is classified as the areas that are have Kedushat Haaretz. B'Shimon Omer are Diskis, Asya, Vasfamya. So he gives you another three areas that are classified as areas that are left out from that which is listed by Moshe, whether he's also defining seemingly Kini, Knizi, and Kadmoni. But these are areas that are generally known to be in Asia Minor. Obviously, Asfami over here is not Spain as we know it, but rather areas of Asia Minor, which again would accord with saying that those are the areas of Amonu Moav, those types of areas over there. And the Balei Tosfot are bothered by the fact that Asya is considered to be Bechutz Laretz. That's considered to be outside of Eretz Yisrael. It is known to be in the areas between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. It's mentioned in the context of being a location that sat between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. But Tosfot says that we find in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that they went to be Ma'aber L'Chodesh, the Shana. They went to interlineate the calendar in Asya, which makes it sound like it has to be part of Eretz Yisrael because you're only allowed to be Ma'aber L'Shana in Eretz Yisrael. The Baal HaTosafot get out of the problem by saying, no, it wasn't Eretz Yisrael, but rather it was outside of Eretz Yisrael. So how could they do the Ibur HaShanah there? They weren't actually declaring Ibur HaShanah there. They were just doing the calculations. So they went there to meet, to make the calculations about it, but they didn't declare it. It was only declared when they went back or when someone was in Eretz Yisrael declared the Ibur HaShanah there. Okay, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Hayush Naimi Dimoto Shakla Shalosh Shanim. Two individuals testified to the fact that he ate it for 3 years. Nimsu Zomimim. And then we find them to be Edim Zomimim. Meaning that another set of Edim come along and say, how could you testify to the fact that they were there for the Shnot Chazakah? You were with us during that period of time. You can't testify to the fact that this individual has been on the property for 3 years. Mishalmim Lo Etakol. They now have to pay him the amount of money they wanted to cause him to lose. Which is here, they're testifying that 3 years of chazakah, which would grant ownership to the party that is sitting on the property and take it away from the original owner, these edim who tried to do that and were lying will now be subject to the penalty of what they were trying to do them, kasher zamam lasot. And that is, they were trying to cause them the loss of the property. They will have to pay for the value of the property that they were trying to take away from the original owner. Shnayim birishona, shnayim bishnina, shnayim bishlishit. If you have two edim to the first year, two edim to the second year, and two edim to the third year, mishalshin b'nehem. If they are found to be edim zomamim, then they will split the cost between them. I mean, in order for this to be meaningful, you would have to have all six of them come and testify two to each year, and then have all of them become edim zomamim in order to now make them all chayav, or responsible for what they are saying, the payment. They're made into edim zomamim, and each one of them contributed to one-third of the problem here. The chazakah was established between all three of them. And since all three of them together created the obligation of the original owner to move it over to the person who's there by chazakah, we're then going to obligate all the parties once they are found to be edim zomimim. The question here is, why can't the edim that came for the first year and second year over here say, when we came, we weren't coming to do anything? We were simply coming to tell him that he's chayav in the peirot, that he's chayav to pay him for the fruits during that period of time, or to say that he's entitled to the peirot during that period of time. But we're not coming here to establish a chazakah. We didn't even know that he was there for 3 years. We just came to testify about our year. Now, when you get to the third set of edim, and the first two edim already have testified, then it's harder to say that they're coming just to deal with peirot. Sounds like they're coming to make the chazakah or close the deal with the chazakah. So based on that, why are the first two sets of edim chayavim to pay for the chazakah? Because their testimony in of itself would have done nothing. So there are those that reference our Gemara early in the Masechta and say that it is biramuz rimuze. It's where all the edim knew of each other when they came in to testify. When they came to the courts and to testify, the three different sets of edim were aware of each other. Therefore, they knew that their testimony would be a contribution towards establishing the chazakah. So they can't claim innocence over here because they did know that their testimony would be aggregated to reach a chazakah. On the other hand, the Baal HaTosafot make a suggestion over here. Tosafot says, the kevin de mafzik may be on the beitin. Since the person on the property is bringing them to beitin, vaday letovato bo. They're definitely coming for his benefit. Kedei lachzik bekarkav lo kedei lechayvo peirot. They're not coming to make him chayav to pay back the peirot to the other party, they're definitely coming to be in his support. So the fact that they are being brought by the machzik, for them should already be an indication of what they're testifying about. They're not coming on behalf of the original owner to say, this guy owes you payroll. That's why we're testifying he was there for the year. It's clear that they're coming to the benefit of the party on the property. And so therefore, even if they weren't aware of each other, the fact that the person who's bringing them to testify clearly wants them to testify on his behalf, and on his behalf would mean that they're testifying towards a chazakah. Therefore, each set of edim is chayav, even though they're not aware of the other edim. Even though they can only testify about a discrete year, nevertheless, the fact that the machzik is bringing them means that they're testifying towards the chazakah. And then that way, the Baal HaTosafot say it's different than the cases we had in Baba Kama and early in the Masechta about the remuze, that they were hinting to each other, they knew each other that they were coming. Over here, you don't need that, because over here, by the nature of who's bringing them, they know what they're testifying about. And therefore, they will know that they're contributing towards a chazakah. Shlosh achim, v'chad mitzterefi mehem. You have three brothers. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are all brothers. Each one of them comes to testify about 1 year that this person had a chazakah on the property. And there's another individual. One individual is mitzteref to all of them. So you have a guy, Kalev, who comes along, and Kalev testifies with Reuven, Kalev testifies with Levi, and Kalev testifies with Shimon. Reuven and Kalev testify he was there the first year. Shimon and Kalev testify he was there the second year. And Levi and Kalev testify he was there the third year. Over here, the Gemara says, number one, Harielu Shloshe Diot. Those are three separate testimonies, and therefore you don't have a problem of relatives, brothers, testifying about the same thing. Each year is considered to be independent, and since each year is independent, you don't have overlapping testimony, and the brothers are considered to be separate. Ve'ene dutachat azama. On the other hand, to be considered zomamim, you would have to be mezim, all of them. It's actually straddling two sides of the fence here. On one hand, each one of their testimonies is considered to be distinct and differentiated because it's about a separate year. About what this one's testifying, the other one is not testifying. Given that, you have a separation of testimony, makes it that the brothers are not considered to be testifying together. On the other hand, only their testimony altogether creates the chazaka. Even though each one of them is testifying separately, it's only the aggregation of their testimony that has a halachic impact with regards to the chazaka. Because of that, until all of them are found to be zomamim, you can't have them pay or be obligated as edim zomamim, because it's only their aggregated testimonies that create the halachic change with regards to the chazaka. And therefore, we have a principle that whenever edim come as a unit, in order to make them into edim zomamim, you have to actually be mezim the entire unit. Gemara learns that in other places, al pish naim edim, al pish losha edim. What do you mean, two and three edim? If you can work with two, of course it works by three. But rather, what we learn from that is that when you have three edim testifying, they become a kat, a singular entity, similar to two. And therefore, if two edim come and testify to make them edim zomimim, you have to incriminate both of them. So too, if you have three edim, it's not enough to incriminate two of them. You have to incriminate all three of them for them to be classified as zomimim. And that's what the Mishnah, according to the Rambam, is saying over here, is that you need to incriminate all three kitei edim over here in order to be classified as edim zomimim, because that is, together, they created the testimony that makes a chazaka, and for that reason, they're considered a singular entity, even though each one of their testimony is discrete, so that we don't have problems with the brothers testifying. We know that even if you make one of them zomim, then the whole testimony falls apart, because you've lost a piece of your chazaka. But in order for them to be chayav to pay as edim zomimim, you have to get them all. Gemara says here, Matnitin delok Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. Titania, I'm Rabbi Yossi. Kishalach Abba Chalafta Eitzel Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri Lomol Torah. So remember, Rabbi Yossi in Shas, Stam Rabbi Yossi is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. So this he says, Abba Chalafta, my father, Chalafta. That's a way of speaking respect about his father. So Rabbi Yossi says about his father, when he went to learn Torah by Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Vamrila Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Eitzel Abba Chalafta Lomol Torah, or he said it that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri came to learn Torah by my father, Chalafta. Amarlo, Harei Shachla Shana Rishona Bifnei Shnayim, Shnia Bifnei Shnayim, Shlishit Bifnei Shnayim, Mao. If you have, like our Mishnah says over here, three sets of Edim, each testifying as to one of the years that is there. Amarlo, Harei Zo Chazaka. He answered him, yes, that is a Chazaka. Amarlo, Afani Omer Kein. Whoever was visiting whom, it's not clear here. Whoever the visitor and the host was, they both came to the conclusion, the same conclusion, that that should be a chazaka, similar to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, if you have three separate eduyot, three separate kitei edim that come, each one testifying to a separate year, that will qualify as a chazaka. Ela Rabbi Akiva cholek b'davar zeh. The only problem is that we might both agree here, but Rabbi Akiva disagrees with us. Shayar Rabbi Akiva omer, davar velo chatzi davar. Edim have to testify to the entirety of that which is relevant in the case, and not chatzi davar, not to something that is only partially relevant. They can't create partial relevance in the case. Rabbanan, the Rabbanan who disagree with Rabbi Akiva, hay davar velo chatzi davar mai avdile. What do they do with the davar chatzi davar? Ilei melemutei achad omer achat begavav, achad omer achat bekrisa. They're coming to testify about the fact that this girl is considered to be a gdola. The way to define or testify about a girl being a gdola is that she has shtei se'arot. She's reached puberty, so we need to see the two hairs, the two pubic hairs, in order to be defined as a gdola. What happens if you have one aid that is testifying about a hair that's seen from behind, and one that sees it from front, meaning that they both can't see what the other one is seeing simultaneously? Gemara says, hai chatzi davar, Ha, chatzi eduti. That's not half of a testimony. That's half of an edut. Because each aid independently saw one se'ara, but they can't be joined together because they were in opposite locations. But each aid on a standalone basis is not an edut, because he's just one aid. But together, technically, they've seen two hairs. But the fact is that the edim didn't see it. The problem here, what the Gemara is pointing out, is there's a difference between chatzi edut and chatzi davar. Chatzi edut means that you don't have sufficient number of people to create an edut. Here we have one aid and one aid. One plus one does not equal two. It's one aid testifying about this, one aid testifying about that. They're not joined together. You have no edut here at all. Forget about chatzi davar. You don't even have an edut. Ella limute shnaim omrim achat begavah, shnaim omrim achat bekvisa. You have two edim testifying as to what they see from the vantage point from her back. Two edim seeing they see from the vantage point of the front. So now I have two edim about each hair. Still, the chachamim say that is davar velo chatzi davar. Each one of their testimonies independently doesn't do anything. It's not meaningful. It's only half of the information that we need. They have the information. The information we need is two hairs. Each one of these sets of edim can only testify about one of them. And even though they saw it simultaneously, they're on the two vantage points simultaneously, and they can see each other, it still doesn't help because neither of them witnessed the totality of what we're looking for over here. So that's considered to be a chatzi davar, the lokol davar. Now, that's the position of the Chachamim. Over here, because the Gemara is saying that Rabbi Kiva disagrees and say chatzi davar even applies to our case by the Chazakah. And that is because what Rabbi Akiva believes over here is that since each set of edim in the chazakah really only obligates you in one third of the amount, it's only aggregation of all three sets of edim that create the obligation in its totality. That means that each set of edim is testifying about a chatzi davar, or really here it's a shlish davar, about a third of it, and therefore they cannot be mitzdareif because the Torah has a gzeirat haketuv that you have to testify about a davar and not a chatzi davar. The Chachamim differentiate their opinion from Rabbi Akiva and say, yes, Rabbi Akiva, you're right in certain instances, like the case by the pubic hairs, where each set of edim is seeing from a different vantage point a different hair, but they can't be mitzdareif because each one of them is testifying about a chatzi davar, only about a half of the totality of the testimony that they want. And that is because they are seeing it at the same time, simultaneously, and the truth is that they could see both of them, or they should be able to see both of them. The lacking is that they're not seeing it. On the other hand, by the chazakah, it's not considered to be a chatzi davar because whatever this set of edim are testifying about the first year, the other set of edim are not testifying about the same thing. They're testifying about a second year. And those are time periods that are completely distinct. The edim that are testifying about the first year, it's not mutually exclusive for them to testify about the second year. They could even testify about the second year, or you could have someone else testify about it because these are not overlapping time periods or overlapping times in which we'd want the evidence to be whole. The evidence by definition is separated by time, and therefore you could have different sets of edim testified and won't be considered a chatzi davar according to the Chachamim. As the Rashbam says over here, it's a logical argument between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. Rabbi Akiva believes davar velo chatzi davar is always applied. If you can't, through your testimony, obligate the full amount, then you're considered to be a chatzi davar. Chachamim say there are two different types of chatzi davars. There's a chatzi davar where it was possible to have all the information at a singular time. Now the edim are testifying about different portions of that singular item. And then there's items that are by definition sequential because they don't have overlapping periods of time. And he says there's a difference with him. Hilkach, kol shana v'shana v'chol yom v'yom, kashiv davar shalem b'fnei atzmo. Every year and every day is considered to be a separate entity. Tal kochacha came to kura the mutei ata. Since the pasuk is coming to tell you a davar velo chatzi davar umiut echadu, there's only one miut. Dika ein lechameit kim chatzi davar shemistaber tfeilu mute. I have to decide which chatzi davar makes more sense to exclude. What the chachamim say is that when it's sequential in nature, that's not considered to be a chatzi davar because each item or each time period is completely separate from the other time period. Therefore, it's not defined as the chatzi davar, or at least it's not the same chatzi davar as the shtei se'arot. And given that it's different, and we can only be memayit one, we're going to be memayit the one that is more logical, which is the one where it's the shtei sarot, where it could have been that they testified as a whole entity about the whole davar that we're looking for here, the shtei sarot. And now that it's split up between the two sets of edim, then we're going to say there, the chachamim, that it's chatzi davar velo davar. And that's why it'll be pasul over there. But over here by the chazakah, we will say that it is kasher, or it does establish a chazakah. So our mishnah that allows you to greater chazaka with three different sets of edim is following the position of the chachamim, and clearly is distinct from that position of Rabbi Akiva, who believes that this would also be defined as a chatzi davar. The Bali Tosafot say, Omer Rashba, which is the Rashmi Shans, disagrees with the Rashbam's chiluk, this fundamental chiluk here between the years of the chazaka versus the shtei sarot. The reason being is because he says that the difference between them is there significance to their testimony independent of the totality? Which is, by the case of shtei sarot, if you see one sear, that testimony of itself has no significance whatsoever. Then by the shlosh shanim of chazakah, each testimony is significant independent of the totality of their testimonies that creates the 3 years of chazakah. And that is that in each year, they testify that he was there. If it's not his property, he's going to have to pay the payroll back to the owner. And therefore, their testimony in each year has significance independent of the aggregation of their testimony. And that's why it's not considered to be a chatzi davar, because their testimony is a davar, even though it might be chatzi davar for something else when it's aggregated towards the chazakah. And therefore, the Rashbi San says you don't need that fundamental distinction that the Rashbam is making, because there's a difference in the nature of the testimony over here as to whether the testimony is about a davar or a chatzi davar. And that by the case of chazakah, each year is a davar, because it has significance. By the seyarot, each seyar has no significance independently. Now, Amar Rav Yehuda, Echad Omer Achla Chitim, Echad Omer Achla Se'urim. If you have two single edim that show up, one aid says he ate it for the 3 years, but he was wheat. Echad Omer, and one of them says Achla Se'urim, that he was there for the 3 years, but he was eating barley. Harizov Chazakah. Rav Yehuda says that that is a chazakah, because you have two edim testifying to the fact that he was there for 3 years. The only thing is that they're giving you different information about what he ate during those 3 years. But the common denominator between them is that he was there for those 3 years, even though they got the crop wrong. So now that's somewhat difficult to understand what Rabbi Yehuda is doing. And now Rabbi Nachman's going to question it, which is going to make it even more difficult, which is, why is that the case? When you're talking about monetary matters, you can talk about a smaller sum being subsumed in a larger sum. So if they test, one says 100 and the other one says 200, then the 200 includes the 100 as well. So you could say that they have overlapping testimonies which give you a common denominator. But over here, where they define the crop and what they planted, their testimonies in many senses are contradictory in nature, because they're testifying about the same time period, and in that same time period, they're telling you something else happened. So why don't we classify it as that being contradictory? And that's what Matifla Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman asked, Elimiato, based on your position, Rav Yehuda, Echad Omer Achla Rishona Shlishit V'Chamishit, one aid comes and testifies that he ate it in the first, third, and fifth year, V'Echad Omer Achla Shnia Revi'it V'Shishit, another aid comes along and tells you that he ate it on the second, fourth, and sixth year, Hachinami Davya Chazoka. According to you, that should also be a Chazoka, even though they're making different statements. One's talking about 1, 3, and 5. The other one's talking about 2, 4, and 6. Nevertheless, between them, you have Shnot Chazakah. So now, Rav Nachman's extrapolation from Yehuda is not clear. In Rav Yehuda's case, it's clear that they're speaking about overlapping years. They're speaking about the same year, just different crop. Rav Nachman's example is that they're not even speaking about the same years. One's being 1, 3, and 5. The other one's speaking 2, 4, and 6. Why should the combination of those create a Chazakah? So for that reason, both the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot explain this Gemara or try to understand what Rav Nachman is saying. The Rashbam says, Rav Nachman loya dudeya tamosho Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Nachman didn't really understand Rabbi Yehuda's position, which the Gemara will get to in 1 second to tell you what his position is. Ela svirle, da'at kam Rabbi Yehuda, echad omer achla chitim, echad omer achla seorim, lav ba'otan gimoshanim. They weren't speaking about the same years. What Rav Nachman thought is, when Rabbi Yehuda says, one aid came and said he ate the Shnot Chazakah with Sorim, and the other one said he ate the Shnot Chazakah with Chitim, he said, this is what they were testifying about. It's a very interesting Rashbam, because the Rashbam says that he actually asked the farmers. He went out to the farmers and he wanted to find out if this was true, that they alternate crops, which is that one year they plant wheat and one year they plant barley. By alternating the crops, you do not need to leave the land fallow, because it rejuvenates by switching the crop. The crop rotation is sufficient to have the field rejuvenate or be renewed with its nutrients. And therefore, what they did was use alternating years, alternating planting years, one year barley, one year wheat. So what Rav Nachman assumed based on that is when Rav Yehuda said one testified to 3 years of chitin, one testified to 3 years of sorim, the normal way that the farmers planted was alternating years. And in essence, what Rav Yehuda is saying is that one testified it to year 1, 3, and 5 that it was planted with chitim. The other guy came along and said that for 2, 4, and 6, it was planted sorim for 3 years. One of them said 3 years of chitim, the other one said 3 years of sorim. But obviously these were alternating years, so they were not testifying about the same years. And what Rav Nachman thinks Rav Yehuda is doing is aggregating them. By aggregating them, you get a totality of 3 years of chazakah between them. So Rav Nachman says, basically, what you're saying is if I have one aid that says 1, 3, and 5, one aid says 2, 4, and 6, that would be a chazakah, which seems strange because they're not talking or testifying about the same years. He says it's similar to the position of Rabbi Shua ben Karcha that we saw back in Daf Lamed Bet that says that Edim can testify about Zeh Achar Zeh. They can testify about sequential evidence or sequential events. And then we're mitzarif those sequential events. One guy said that he admitted that he borrowed money. The other one says that we saw him borrowing money. So the common denominator between the two testimonies, even though they're talking about totally different cases, is that he borrowed money from this individual. So we're able to be mitzarif distinct testimonies as long as the aggregation of those testimonies brings you to a conclusion that the common denominator is that he was there for 3 years, which is over here in this case. The individuals are saying he was there for 3 years of a wheat harvest. No one says, no, he was there 3 years of a barley harvest. Given that they alternate crops, what they're both saying is that he was there for 3 years. Even though the years are not overlapping, but together you would come to the conclusion that he was there for 6 years, but a minimum of 3 years that he was there. And therefore, their testimony together should be sufficient. That is Rav Nachman's Havamina about what Rav Yehuda is saying. And therefore, Rav Nachman tries to extrapolate that and say, yes. Based on what you're saying, it would be 1, 3, 5, and 2, 4, 6, and they'd be mitzarif. And the answer to that would be Eino Hanami. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the way you're understanding him, that would be the case. The Bali Tosafot, on the other hand, say that the Rashman's explanation doesn't make sense. Ve'nira. Dim came my porich. Then why is Rav Nachman a question? Elo mi'atach, la rishona, Eino Hanami. That according to Rav Nachman's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, what Rav Nachman is saying is an extrapolation. It is basically, yes, that would be the case. Why is Rav Nachman asking it as a question, rather than making it as a statement? And therefore, Venira the Perish, Rav Nachman Yodah to Tarvayu Achadashat to Kamesadeh. Rav Nachman understood that Rav Yehuda was saying that they were testifying about the same year. Vachi Perushon, this is his question. Kevin Damar Havya Chazoka, since Rav Yehuda believes that this is a Chazoka, Afagav the Mechashe Adadi, even though the two Edim are contradicting each other. One aid says he was there 3 years of wheat, the other one says 3 years of barley. They're speaking about the same 3 years. How are you able to take the common denominator between them if they are contradictory statements? If you do that, then you would also come out with this strange conclusion, which is Elamiata. If one of them says 1, 3, and 5, and the other one says 2, 4, and 6, meaning that he planted 1, 3, and 5, he left it fallow in 2, 4, and 6. The other one says, no, he planted 2, 4, and 6, left it fallow 1, 3, and 5. Then they also should be mitzareif, because now we have them testifying over that whole 6 year period that the individual was there, despite the fact that they are contradicting each other. So if you say that a contradiction doesn't take away from the overlapping nature of their testimony, then not only in a case where they're speaking about the same years should you say that, even when they're speaking about different years, we should say that they are considered, even though they're contradicting which years, the fact is they both testified about 3 years, and that should be sufficient to create an edut. The Gemara's answer is, Amalei Rabbi Yehuda, Achiyashta, Rabbi Yehuda says to Rav Nachman, what are you talking about? The cases are not similar. Hotam deshatam tekam asid mar, lokam asid mar. On the year that one's testifying, the other one is not testifying. Hacha tarvayu b'chadashata kemisade. Over here, they're both testifying about the same year. So the way that the Rishbam is reading the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda is clarifying for Rav Nachman, you got it wrong. You misunderstood my explanation. You thought my explanation was they were testifying about different years. That's not correct. My explanation, they were speaking about the same years. Since in my case, they were speaking about the same years, in your case, they're speaking about different years, that's why in my case, you can create a chazakah, in your case, you cannot create a chazakah. So then, ma'ika the meimar. So then, why are they testifying? If they're testifying about the same year, why are they not contradictory? Because ben chite lisari, lava datayu in the inshay. People don't pay such close attention as to whether the field is planted with wheat or with barley. They said whatever they thought they saw. All they needed to testify about was the fact there was a chazakah. So they weren't so careful about exactly what was on the field or what was being planted. And given that, their testimony, we wipe away the parts that are considered to be contradictory because we assume that was they didn't pay attention to that. What's important to us, or the meat of their testimony, is that he was there for 3 years. And about that, they both agree. Therefore, it'll be a singular testimony that creates a chazakah. By the case of 1, 3, 5, 2, 4, and 6, they're not testifying about the same years. That's the way the Rishbam will explain it. For the Balei Tosafot, who say that the extrapolation is that, Rabbi Yehuda, you allow for contradictory testimony, I'll create another set of contradictory testimony that should also be good. The answer in the end is Rabbi Yehuda says, my case is not a case of contradiction. Because the contradictory part of their testimony, I say, is just something that's a sidebar. It wasn't something that they really thought about. Given that, their testimony is considered to be singular and not differentiated or separated. And that's the difference between my position and your position. All right, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Nun Vav Amud Bet.